schlocky financial advisor prospecting questions. Don't say these on LinkedIn. Hey, what's up, party people? It's me, Sarah G with the Smack, and I'm back. I am a CFA charter holder, and I used to be a financial advisor. On this podcast, I provide non-BS oriented, straight up views on LinkedIn and other financial advisor marketing topics. You can't get this anywhere else, people. So if that's of value, then please subscribe. And if not, then please leave this podcast right now. All right. Many of you are asking bad financial advisor prospecting questions that are making you look like a desperate, pushy salesperson on LinkedIn. Or some of you aren't even doing anything on LinkedIn because you don't want to look like a desperate, pushy salesperson. So what do you say to somebody that you might potentially want to do business with? Here are some questions to avoid asking. And also, I'm going to teach you how to come up with your own prospecting questions. So stay tuned. First of all, let's talk about how financial advisors get new clients. There are basically three ways. Number one, word of mouth. This is how most of you have done it. This is clearly the easiest way to grow a business because the trust is higher than in all other forms of marketing. There's no denying that. For this reason, you should be connected to all of your clients on LinkedIn. You should be sending them a monthly newsletter, and you should be taking great care of them, which a lot of you do. Even with this, though, understand that you can't control what your clients say. Some people are just never going to refer you to anybody because they're uncomfortable referring. They may not want to talk about money with their friends. And for that reason, I advise people to consider the likelihood of getting a referral as a bonus rather than what you rely upon to grow your business. Marketing assets, that's the number two way. So you can create what I call marketing assets. This is what we refer to as pull marketing. Blogs, podcasts, YouTube videos, guest blogs where you blog into somebody else's publication. This is nurture marketing. What you're basically looking to do is educate people and create demand for your services over time. This does not happen overnight. Some of you might not have that content gene, so to speak, where you know you might not have the creativity, you might not have the time to invest, you might hate putting together blogs, all right? You really do have to go past what other people who are doing the same thing are saying, because there is a competitive market for this. Retirees aren't gonna listen to 12 podcasts, all right? They may have one or two that they like. So you have to make sure that your distribution levels are high enough, and this takes time. It may mean that you have to make inroads with the influencers or the gatekeepers who are in front of these audiences, and that can take time. The other thing is with the creation of marketing assets, keep in mind that you most of the time are not going to get anything from the people who read or who consume this content. There are just takers. A lot of people are just going to be takers who want to take your advice and do it themselves. I'm a blogger. I've given away so much value to people who will never pay me a dime for it. However, this is effective for me because enough of the people eventually do convert. So understand that. And by the way, if you're one of those people out there who's benefited from my advice, you know what to do. And then the last method is direct solicitation, going out there and knocking on doors. This is something that a lot of you are uncomfortable with. So let's talk about it. Yeah, okay. Direct solicitation stinks at times, okay? It doesn't have to, but a lot of times it does. Some people don't like to directly solicit business because it makes them feel like a salesperson. Some people can't do it. They never will do it. It might have to do with your personal ideology. The people who tend to get irritated at telemarketers are the ones that themselves are uncomfortable going out and marketing because there's just something that they believe that anyone who has to go out and ask for business, there's something wrong with it. And that's okay. If that's your belief, that's okay. All right. But keep in mind that if you do believe this, that you are closing off an entire method of advisor prospecting. And that really does leave you with word of mouth marketing or creating marketing assets. Again, if that's your cup of tea, then that's fine. But you have better make sure that you have good assets and that you have good methods and that that's going to work for you. For me, I had to go out at a young age and I had to have jobs where I had to learn how to sell. When I was in high school, I had no connections. My parents had no connections and they couldn't get me a good job. And it wasn't that I necessarily expected that, but I knew a lot of kids that they did have that, that all they had to do was have their mother or father talk to their friends at the golf club. And next thing I knew, they were the receptionist at the doctor's office. All right. I didn't have that. When I was in high school, I basically was going to be checking groceries at the supermarket or answering phones for $7 an hour, or I had to learn how to telemarket because there were a ton of those jobs. And let me tell you, it totally stank. I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I was actually kind of good at it from the beginning, but it was very humbling. I remember that one summer I had to call other college students at a certain university. And it was the same summer that I broke up with my high school boyfriend who went to that college. And I was so worried that I was going to call and Raul, not his real name, by the way, was going to answer the phone. That actually happened once. I remember so clearly. I was a waitress and I had to wait on this table. And there was this one girl that was like trying to steal my boyfriend at that point. And I had to like be nice to her because I was the waitress. Oh my gosh, what a horrible memory. But anyways, this was humbling as hell. Okay. These memories are humbling as hell for me to even recall to my mind. But you know what? It taught me how to be composed and it taught me not to take it too seriously and how to create business out of nothing at all at a very young age. And I found that once I got better at it, could really make a lot of money at it. And I have been able to become an entrepreneur. It doesn't have to be soul killing. To some extent, it's a numbers game because you're not going to get anywhere making 3 sales calls a day. But what if you could do it in a way that makes people feel that you are a valuable resource, somebody with answers that they need, somebody who has useful information that will make their lives better in a non-threatening way? And I'm going to tell you, financial advisors, that the key here is asking high quality financial advisor prospecting questions. All right. The questions are so critical. So first, let's wipe the slate clean of those bad financial advisor prospecting questions that I see a lot of you asking. All right. How about something like, if you could retire right now, would you be ready for it? I have a question for you. Could you be saving more money? When do you plan to retire? Oh, terrible. What's your retirement plan? What's your risk number? Are you looking for financial advice? Do you need help with your money? Are you happy with your current financial advisor? Do you have any credit card debt you'd like to pay down? Okay. You see where I'm going with this, right? These are obviously bait. These are questions that are really none of your business until you've earned the right to ask them. You know it's a bad question if by answering yes, the next statement out of your mouth would naturally be, well, then let's meet and discuss. Okay, that's the litmus test, is if by answering yes, the person is setting themselves up for the meeting pitch. Okay, so for all of these reasons, these questions make you look like you're not humble. It makes you look like you're just selling. It makes you look like you're just not high quality because you have to go out and put pressure like this, all right? So here's how to ask good financial advisor prospecting questions. Number one, I want you to look at it as business socializing. We all know about business socializing, right? When you have to go to the holiday party or when you have to go to like your spouse's, awards banquet for something. I mean, to some extent, socializing is like real socializing when we're like hanging out on the couch, right, with our friends drinking, or maybe not, but whatever. And then there's like fake socializing where you're, you know, kind of in situations like at your kid's school or whatever, right? And so you just want to look at it that, yes, this is a business thing, but it doesn't mean that I have to abandon my status as a human being and that I have to assume that the other people aren't human beings either. Like, yes, I am possibly the vendor and you are possibly the client, but we are human beings here, both of us, right? And the more that you can be natural like this and just have it be another conversation, the better the interaction is going to be. And this game changed for me so much. Once I realized one day after being on LinkedIn for years and years, it just hit me that people really are the key to your success. And I'm not trying to be some sappy motivational speaker here on this, but you just never know when someone you talk to might say something that could help you. And I think we should all have that mindset. Those of you that are smashing vendors and bashing vendors, and yeah, trust me, a lot of them need to be smashed and bashed. But just try to be open to the, because you see, if you're open to the possibility of, hey, I'm going to send this LinkedIn message, or I'm going to try to pitch this person, or I'm going to try to talk to this person, right? And it might end up going the other way, because then you give up control, and then you give up being narrow-minded. And then you are open to seeing the person for what they truly are and what their situation truly is, which most of the time, I hate to break it to you, is not going to be what you quote unquote need it to be. But by liberating yourself of that assumption that it is, you know that when you do find it, it's going to be true instead of something that's contrived and you're forced. Because in other words, you got to take the blinders off. You got to take the veil off and you got to see things for what they truly are. And looking at it like this interaction, I want it to be a positive one. Let's just make it a positive one and see what happens, with the intention of understanding if the person is a fit for what I do. All right. Try to look at it like that. And the way that the numbers work, people say, oh, it's a numbers game. I don't like that phrase because I think that that then encourages us to go out there and just use like one of these LinkedIn automated services and send out like 300 messages a day and blanket everybody with a pitch and this, that. And I think that kind of excuses us to be able to do that. And I don't like that either. If you talk to enough people, most people won't be interested. A few will be, and some will be total jerks. Now for the jerks, look at it that you found out who to cross off your social agenda early enough in the game. And that, just be thankful, you know, to block them out. So from now on, whatever, you went out on LinkedIn, you tried to talk to somebody, they were a real jerk. You may just disconnect with them as a result of that. And good for you, because you found out their number. For the people who aren't interested at that time, but might be in the future, just think of it that you planted a seed. You can make those seeds grow through consistent positive interactions with them. But just like a tree that can't be rushed to grow, neither can a relationship be. And that's why I love LinkedIn, because you're connected to these maybe later people and they're frequently seeing your content. Hopefully you're posting up good, high quality content that's not BS, that's not the canned cookie cutter, you know, like social wear or hearsay social or whatever it's called. Like, hopefully it's not those boring, bland articles. All right. And I have had it so many times where I just get contacted by someone who I wasn't even conscious that they were really paying attention to me, that they were watching me and I'm posting and I've been like messaging them here and there. And then bingo, out of nowhere, like I get an email that someone bought my book and it's that person. And this has happened consistently by me having this idea of plant the seed, go away, come back, be useful, post good stuff. I suppose I should try to make it sound like it's harder than that. But if you just did that in a certain way, that would actually be enough to help you get clients on LinkedIn. Okay. So the first step is look at it as business socializing and that you're planting these little seeds. I don't like to advocate for quantity over quality, but like I said, the truth of the matter is the more times that you do this in a high quality fashion, the higher the chances that you're going to get fewer of those jerks and maybe later people. And that eventually you're going to hit on someone that says, I'm very interested in what you have to say. The second step is smile. It does make a difference what your energy level is. And I want you to smile, though, not necessarily because it makes you sound better, but I want you to be in the mindset of, I'm excited to meet other people. I think it'll be fun to interact with other people, because that goes along with number one about look at it that you're planting the seeds. Number three, ask yourself what seeds you want to plant. So you're on LinkedIn, you're going to look at that person, look at their profile. And then before you open your mouth, I want you to ask yourself, how can you lift this person up? What do you want to give them? How do you want to change them? How can you serve them? How can you be their hero, offering them something that nobody else has been able to figure out about them? And then last, use the two-sentence rule. The two-sentence rule helps you to contextualize your argument, because what you're doing is you're leading into the question instead of just dropping it flat on them. Keep in mind, if you're asking these sales prospecting questions on LinkedIn, you really should be proceeding in sequences of three messages. That really is the best way to contextualize or to lead up to it. And so I have another blog, and I am going to link it in the notes here. And I've written to an extent on how to create these messaging sequences. So here are some examples of good financial advisor prospecting questions. Maria, I occasionally post here about retirement related topics. Are there any questions you'd like me to answer in my next post? Roberto, what information can I get you, if any, that could possibly make retirement easier to understand? Carla, how do you think knowing somebody like me could possibly be useful to you other than working directly with me? I say this because I only work with a small percentage of people, but don't want to limit my influence to just my clients. I mean, there you're making it pretty clear, you're spelling it out, that you're not looking to do a sales pitch here. You're very selective about who you actually are going to engage with, but you're just in it to help Carla to have a better understanding of something. Emily, what do you feel we financial advisors misunderstand about doctors like you? Honestly, I'm looking to further my ability to empathize with those whose lives I want to enrich. Now here, you're just kind of taking the deal off the table. And that's effective too, because there's no semblance of a sales pitch here. You actually really are trying to understand what life looks like from Emily's point of view. Pierre, dentists typically have a lot of trouble saving money while they pay down their debt. Is this something you want to self-teach, or are you open to reading a blog I wrote about it? So yeah, this is effective because you really don't want to be that advisor that just kind of foists content on people. You want to make sure that they're even open to learning about it and that they're open to learning about that particular topic. Again, the assumptions are really what kills the questions. If you're going to assume that just because Pierre is a dentist, that he has this issue with saving money, then that may backfire. If you're going to assume that Pierre wants to read your content because you have a really great blog, then that also is going to backfire. I mean, I've made all these mistakes. I want you all to know, I'm not making this podcast because it's something that I've dreamed up. I've tested these messages and I've made these mistakes, and that's how I know what to do, because I've done it the other way. Okay. So basically what you're looking to do here with these questions is that you're trying to understand them and create a sense of distance and removal from the sales pitch for both the seller and the buyer. And this is rare. Not a lot of people are going to do this. Everyone's in such a rush. They have to meet the quota. But this can really give clarity to the purpose of why you're trying to talk to them. And you need to do that early on, because otherwise they may have all kinds of assumptions about you that could shut them down. And you may have all kinds of assumptions about them that could waste your time or that could cause you to turn them off. So let's talk a little bit about desperation in the hard sell. When you're doing a direct solicitation or being a salesperson, it's easy to slip in the mindset, I've got to get them to buy this specific thing or do what I want them to do right now. I myself have been in this position. I know what it's like to be in a only commission sales job. This is a loaded gun. This type of attitude cannot have a place in financial advisor prospecting in the future if we want to be better, if we want to be better as advisors, if we want the profession to have a better reputation. This is harmful and dangerous. This kind of an attitude of I've got to get them to do this is really going to limit your long-term success. Essentially, what you're doing is you're pointing a gun at the buyer's head, and it's not a good feeling for either of you to feel. Do you like feeling like that? Do you like feeling like you have to be the person to go out there and to make people do certain things? And it's very serious when a financial advisor does it, because being an advisor isn't like selling washing machines. This is people's futures. It's not like selling a $200 washing machine that's going to need to be replaced in 2 years. I understand that it is a cold world, and I am dead serious about that, that I have been through this and I have seen this, that there are people who will turn their back on you so fast. And especially as an entrepreneur, you are all alone having to go out there and make it every day. And that is nothing to take lightly. You're out there trying to make a dollar. I've been in this position many times, and what I've come to see is that there's a right way and a wrong way to do this. The truth is that your needs can never be the driver, because it's so easy to lose objectivity and integrity. If you are in a position of desperation and it is leading you to compromise objectivity, I'm telling you to do something about it before you go out there and solicit. Maybe it means getting a second job to take the financial pressure off you. Maybe it means that you don't go on that Disney vacation next year. Maybe an eat what you kill sales job just isn't for you. Maybe you should have gotten a salaried financial advisor position somewhere. I mean, they do have them. I know that this is not what you want to hear, but I'm sick of financial advice being a profession with a bad reputation. We can say all the fiduciary rhetoric that we want. We can say all the, until we're blue in the face, we could say we do what's best for the client. But the financial pressures are what they are. And until we get to the point where we can find ways to hold back from being biased and from saying things that are biased when we grow our businesses, financial advice is always going to be a schlocky industry riddled with conflict and plagued by a lack of integrity to varying degrees. That's what I got for you today. Go out there and work on asking good financial advisor prospecting questions. And as of now, it is April 2021. I do have spots on my membership. Financial at 47 Financial Advisor LinkedIn Messages is my ebook. I'm going to put the link in the show notes as well. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show, and I will see you in the next one.